Forrest Gump, 1994 American comedy drama by legendary director Robert Zemeckis, this week on Black Guys on White Movies. Now, Forrest Gump is, we really want to talk about Robert Zemeckis because a recent episode we talked Avatar and James Cameron. And James Cameron is big special effects, big, broad, different, creating different worlds, right? And Robert Zemeckis is like, I think you said mundane special effects.
Yeah, very much so. And as you were discuss, well, as you were just describing that, it almost makes me think like to compare and contrast the two. Cameron's stories almost exist for the effects, whereas Zemeckis, those effects really exist just to drive the story. And sometimes in some pretty mundane ways, just things you couldn't capture in camera in real life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So for Forrest Gump specifically, basically, I love how they describe it. The history of the United States from the 50s to the 70s unfolds from the perspective of an Alabama man with an IQ of 75 who yearns to be reunited with his childhood sweetheart. And that's how they describe it a lot of a man with an IQ of 75, to not say that Tom Hanks is playing a person with a mental condition, or you know what I mean, or mentally handicapped.
It's kind of a sidestep. They kind of even sidestep it in the film in
In the
any sort
film
of real
itself,
way.
because I'm not sure that this was okay then, really. Even though Forrest ended up, this is a, was a really successful movie, kind of a beloved American movie, but it should be hard to watch now. To watch Forrest Gump go, a journey.
Yeah, for
I
sure.
don't know what the sex is. I love you. I mean, it's like, bro, what?
Yeah, it's
He has
tough.
an IQ of 75. It's like, come on, man. He, what are we doing? What are we doing?
It is it's definitely 1994.
And
You know,
somehow,
just a
yes.
different era.
And somehow, it also is like this idiot. Because that's how they describe an IQ of 75, which also doesn't mean a whole lot if you research what IQ is. It's not really the great measurement of intelligence, but basically, this idiot is somehow a part of every important US event, like it says, from the 50s to the 80s, really. Just by dumb luck, just by walking around. He's just like, oh, now I'm at a Alabama football. Now I'm in the army, and now I got a check from Apple, and now I have a shrimping boat, and I met the, every president again. And he's like, it's like, come on, man, this is insane.
It's like he's like not only present for but also like at the root of like every major event of the mid-20th century.
He's there when the kid, the black kids integrate that school, Southern
Oh
school for the first
yeah.
time. He's like, I handed her her purse. She dropped it. It's like, Forrest, go somewhere, Forrest. If you don't get your butt out of here.
And I think I just want to touch on because, like, all of those scenes in that movie are a pretty good example of some of those mundane special effects because it'll
Exactly.
a lot of times be done like through a TV broadcast that we've all seen a million times, right? We've all seen
Right.
that image of like the school children walking up surrounded by white parents and kids who are yelling, screaming at them, or you know, some clip of President Johnson or President Kennedy, and then they will digitally add Tom Hanks into it in a very mundane way that doesn't bring attention to itself. And I think that it really kind of sums up the kind of way we were thinking about and talking about Zemeckis's effects in his films.
Totally. And this is something like, I mean, as much as James Cameron is a, at the forefront of special effects filmmaking, so is Robert Zemeckis.
Absolutely.
I mean, his career, is really astonishing.
Yeah, I mean it. I mean, if we think about filmmakers that were really driving forward the effects industry, you know what I mean, throughout the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, I think Jim Cameron, George Lucas, and Robert Zemeckis are kind of the three.
Spielberg.
Spielberg, for sure, for
He
sure.
he's in there, but because he was also a part,
He's a
except for
part of that
Cameron,
group too, you
he's
know?
a part of Lucas's work and he's a part of a lot of Zemeckis's work,
Right.
Zemeckis' work in a funny way. So they're all connected, or at least those three are connected. And Cameron does his own thing. But
Yeah.
going
He's
back
not a
to like
joiner.
Back to the Future, which actually the first one wasn't a lot of special effects. Or maybe you just don't notice them, but these movies were obviously huge sci-fi, science fiction movies. And then of course, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
Which is one of, maybe I
Pioneer.
don't know if it's one of the first, but definitely one of the best human animation hybrid movies.
Yeah, for sure. And you think about that's like that movie was made right before like computer animation really started getting kind of
Yeah. photorealistic.
So it made
They
more
had to
sense to go with
draw.
2D.
Yeah.
Yeah, hand drawn cell animation, but you know, the way it integrates is amazing.
It's amazing. Hand-drawn animation. But the main character is a human man, like live action human man. And most of the sets are like live action sets. He's not in a cartoon world. He's in the real world. And then he's in Toontown. Interacting with toons.
Yeah.
But Toontown is like this, like the set of a Hollywood studio. Like it's the lot. It's crazy.
It's been so long since I've seen, and I don't know if I've actually ever seen it the whole way through. I gotta watch it.
I watched it a lot as a kid. I definitely haven't seen it in maybe, 30, 35 years, but well, not 35, but 32, 30. More Back to the Future
28.
movies, 28, more Back to the Future movies. Death Becomes Her, which is actually a really funny Halloween movie
Yeah.
with a lot of special effects because it's like about witches,
I
right?
almost suggested it like a
Well,
month
not witches, but
ago.
they have like a magic potion. Anyway, it's like some witchcraft, basically.
It's some witchcraft. I almost suggested that one like a month ago, not even thinking about the Zemeckis of it all. And then when we started talking about Zemeckis, I saw it in his IMDb. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that was him.
Wow.
Great
Contact,
story.
which is another great science fiction movie
Yeah, great one.
with Jodie Foster.
And we referenced Contact when we talked about The Arrival, because I really do feel that there's some thematic inspiration there that's not talked about.
And Contact is based on a novel by Carl Sagan. So
Absolutely.
Arrival definitely was influenced by the writings of Carl Sagan. Any modern sci-fi
Yeah,
is influenced by the
absolutely.
writings of Carl Sagan. So What Lies Beneath, which was an interesting little thriller, and this was in 2000, but I saw this in the theater. I remember with Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer, and it was like a ghost.
Yeah.
So again, more special effects, really subtle.
I think that's the one that I was that this whole mundane effects thing made me think about too, because there are a lot of effects in that movie, but they are done to do really subtle things like I think one's like a bed sheet moving on its own, you
Right.
know, and
Yeah.
like very mundane kind of creepy things, but done with CGI in a way that you couldn't do with strings and stuff.
That movie is like very much a forebearer to what's the one everybody was talking about recently with Toni Collette? And she was like one of her kids was possessed. Right? Let
She's
me
in
see if I
so
can
many
find this
wrong movies.
movie. But it was a movie where like the possession, and she was the only one that could see Hereditary. So everybody thought she was going crazy, but she was like, no, this is happening and my kid is possessed. And they were like, no, it's not. And What Lies Beneath is the wife seeing this ghost or being interacting with this ghost. So it was real subtle. So you would believe that even you as a viewer didn't know what to believe. And her husband was like, you're going crazy. Am I gonna have to put you in a hospital? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Hereditary. What a wild movie.
Yeah,
But
That's What Lies Beneath times 100.
Yeah, for sure. Hereditary will make you uncomfortable for a couple of days afterwards. But yeah, no, I definitely agree. Like that kind of almost gaslighting effect, right? Ghosts are such gaslighters.
They really are. Yo,
Yo.
ghosts, like, just be more straightforward.
But straight up.
Stop,
Don't.
like, it goes back to Mario, the game, but like the ghosts
You
only
look.
move when you're not looking.
Absolutely.
It's like, we know you're
Absolutely.
there. Also, we're playing, we see you.
Right. Right. We it's an ultimate
It's not a POV. Yeah, it's not a
gaslight.
POV thing.
Right.
We're seeing the whole screen. The ghost coming in and get that sound. Doo-doo-doo, whatever is that little weird
Yeah.
sound? Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. It's
And you
great.
gotta turn back. And then you keep, gotta go for it. And you turn back. I can't even remember. I feel like there was a way to kill those ghosts, but maybe
I never found it
more an
out.
advanced thing. Yeah.
Yeah, ghosts are incredibly passive aggressive, is what I'm learning right now in this conversation.
In that haunted house, yeah. I think we got some ghosts here.
You
This is, we're in an old house too, so we definitely got something
know,
going
yeah,
on.
for sure. Same thing. Old house here. It's like, I know I didn't leave this here, but again,
Yeah.
just be straightforward, ghost. You didn't have to move my stuff around.
Yeah, it's like water torture that they're doing. Like,
Right.
you know, just a
One drip
little
at a
bit
time.
every day. Yeah, one drop at a time to get you. Then Castaway, actually, What Lies Beneath and Castaway came out the same year.
Same year. I didn't realize that. I saw that in IMDb. Blew my mind.
And remember in the Whiplash pod episode, I said Damien Chazelle needs to do a 2-in-1 or a 3-in-2
Yeah,
or
for sure.
something. Sometimes you got to just drop the movies either back to back or in the same year or back. Roger Rabbit, Back to the Future 2 and Back to the Future 3 are year, 88, 89, 90. Bam, bam, bam.
Boom, boom, boom.
Sometimes you can't always wait for, you can't Kendrick Lamar movie sometimes. You got to have your run where you're back to back, you know?
What I appreciate about that 2000 double feature for Zemeckis is like something that Spielberg always does in his doubles, which is like just two vastly different
They're
movies.
different. They're so different.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're so different. And Castaway is really maybe, man, we have to come back later and like what is his most iconic movie?
Yeah.
But Castaway with Wilson is on the list. It's on the it's
That's
in the
true.
top of the list.
And that's another one I think, you know, again, talking about kind of mundane effects, like that movie is full of effects.
Yeah.
And it's all very exciting stuff because the guy's like, you know, stranded on an island or whatever. But the effects just recreate nature, right?
Yeah.
Like
Yeah.
they recreate something that you could not shoot, but does exist, right? And there's like
Right.
the scene where he's in the like the plane crashes, and even then it's like what effects are there? It's all done very real.
Yeah. It's interesting because there is something about the way he does it. And maybe he just does it a year or two ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
Because sure, a lot of movies that aren't sci-fi movies or big epics or action movies use special effects, especially now.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that movie used special effects, but he's always done it in such a seamless way. Or like, I'm gonna call it a gimmick, but I don't mean it in a bad way. But it's like the gimmick of the movie, like with Forrest Gump
Yeah.
using old footage and putting them in there.
Yeah.
And Castaway, it's like, well, he's on an island, so we need it to be real, and the ball needs to be facing up certain times, you know, just like little things.
Yeah.
But it's all in service of like this premise of the movie, you know, the very premise of the movie.
Right, it's kind of all in service of the shot, the storytelling, the like I think about
But it's
the
like,
feather in Forrest Gump is one that I
yeah,
think of, right? Which is clearly
it's
all
a great one.
CGI, but
Yeah.
like it's there to create this emotional story moment that brings us in and out of the story,
But it's
right?
also like, it's also like not meant to not be noticed. And I think other
Yeah.
movies, it's like, you know, we set special effects so you don't notice them. His is almost like, I want you to notice it. And I want you to know that this is special, you know?
Yeah.
And he
It's
does it
like
in a way that doesn't like distract really, which is, but does make you go, oh, wow. Or makes you go, wow. be in awe of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. I feel like, yeah, he's not trying to avoid you noticing. It's almost like makes me think of like a play, right? Where like you're sitting in the audience and you are looking at the stage around the actors and you know this isn't really happening, but you're buying in. He almost uses like special effects to create buy-in. You know what I mean? Not necessarily to create a whole world for you, but just to create some buy-in to like the movie experience you're on.
I agree with that. That's an interesting way to put it. Really gets my mind cranking. But we're gonna keep going with
Yeah, for
next.
sure.
He kind of goes into animation now. He has a little run. First with the Polar Express, which I know a lot of people that really love the Polar Express as a Christmas movie.
Never saw that
I've
one.
never seen the whole thing either. Never seen the whole
Yeah,
thing either. I think
never saw that
I
one.
just was at the wrong age, didn't have any kids, like just kind of missed it. And
Yeah,
maybe I have
probably.
a kid now, maybe in the next decade or so we'll Polar Express it up. But it does
Yeah,
have a
we.
weird, I remember it having a weird like Uncanny Valley thing,
And a lot of people
especially
talk
with,
about that. Yeah, a lot of people talk about that with his work and his animation work, and even I've heard with the new movie Here with Tom Hanks and Robin Wright, like there's some de-aging in there. People talk a lot about the Uncanny Valley, but I also think that's like kind of just, I mean, that's just going to be a part of it.
So with this movie, Zemeckis felt a live action, I'm going to read from the Wikipedia, for the live action was unfeasible, claiming that it would look awful and be impossible. It would cost $1 billion instead of $160 million. He felt it would rob the audience of the style of the book, which is a part of the emotion of the story. But he agreed conventional animation would also not work, would suit the film poorly. So a new process was created. And this was one of the, must have been the first or one of the first movies where actors were filmed with motion capture equipment. Because it says the new process was created, so this must have been the first.
I'm sure it was early.
Where actors were filmed in a motion capture environment on a black box stage would then be animated to make the resulting film. So that maybe that's why maybe there's a little un, the faces are a little off because this was the first to do this. And this is again, Robert Zemeckis. And this is at the same time of like Lord of the Rings.
Absolutely.
And this is when James Cameron was developing the tech for Avatar. So he definitely stopped by set and was taking notes and, you know, hired
Oh,
some of
for
these same
sure.
guys, I'm sure, to do his
Oh,
movie.
absolutely. I mean, if you think about between this and, like you said, Gollum and Lord of the Rings, those folks were laying the groundwork for everything that Avatar came and the thing since.
And you have to be successful to be a special effects filmmaker. Because the decision to film in motion capture necessitated another studio to co-produce and cost $1 million per minute of footage.
Good God.
And that's like, that has to be a footage shot, not final film footage. So that's, this movie was expensive. This movie was
That's
crazy.
wild. Was that like 2004? No, 2002?
2004, yeah. It
Oh,
came out
wow.
2004, so it was being made in 2002 for sure.
Incredible. 2004 dollars. Can you imagine?
Man. Then we go to Beowulf, which we texted about briefly. Now, Beowulf is a classic story, classic literature. I saw this in theaters. This movie was legitimately scary in theaters. When that monster comes out and screams, it was like heart shaking. He was giant. I think it was even like 3D, and it was the
Oh, I
best.
think it was 3D, yeah.
Still to this day, I think the best 3D animation that I've seen. Usually 3D is pretty much, to me, pretty much sucks. Like
Yeah,
I
yeah.
almost don't need to see any movie in 3D. But because this was Zemeckis, I was like, I gave it a shot, and this was like the best 3D experience I had. The sound with the visual, it was like legitimately like, oh my God, when the
Yeah.
monster was running through these people. But in 2D at home, I think it came on TV maybe a few years later. Does it just does not, it's hard to get through. It was hard to get through.
That's interesting because I definitely saw it at home first, right? I never saw it in theaters.
I think you have to if you're not going to see, be able to see it in theater.
I wish, yeah, it sounds dope. I wish I had, but I still enjoyed it even on the home. That said, I mean, I haven't watched it again since. I've thought about it a number of times, but like I did enjoy that. I thought it was interesting to like that one was less of the Polar Express, like the digital actor is exactly 1-to-1 what the physical actor is. Because I believe that Beowulf is played by Ray Winstone, who's a big, like a big dude, like, you know, big bulky dude. And yet the character that he was playing of Beowulf was like super kind of Thor ripped. You know what I mean? So I just thought that was kind of interesting what that kind of animation style could do as far as the physicality of the actors. I think Angelina Jolie's in there. She's got like a crazy dragon tail. It was just
Yeah,
very
she's
cool.
yeah. I just read something here. So much data was produced in the course of the creation of the film. The studio was forced to upgrade all its processors to multi-core versions. Again, this is probably something that had not been done before. You know?
That's crazy.
Like he made all of like Sony Studios upgrade their processors to stay ahead of the game.
Wow. That's one, you know, as a kid, I was always super into special effects, computer effects, all that stuff. And I used to read magazines about it and stuff. And it's always kind of interesting to see like which movies pioneer something and then all the other movies that kind of like use that special effects package that was pioneered on that movie. You know what I mean? And I feel like there's probably a lot of things that we've seen on film that could probably be traced directly back to some of these movies by Zemeckis.
100%. Then he has a version of the Christmas Carol. So with all of these, there's a holiday theme. Beowulf's kind of it's not a holiday movie, but it kind of fits in a holiday aesthetic. But obviously, Polar Express and Christmas Story was, but he was not. This
Fantasy
was a
for
point in his
sure.
career where he was pulling from classic literature. So it almost makes me
Yeah.
wonder, like, was he, you know, mentally, if he was something about literature or something about his life leading him in that direction to explore advancements in special effects? Like, he didn't have the stories for them, some things he wanted to try, you know?
That's really interesting because I never really caught the through line there that those are all kind of classics of English literature, like
Yeah.
even Polar Express. I mean, I think that came out in the 50s. It's a certified classic by now, and the other two certainly. I never really pulled that together.
And even there's like a expression gradation
Yeah.
in these. Like Polar Express is pretty much people walking and talking. It's adventure.
Yeah.
Beowulf is a monster that's like let loose. There's a lot more movement and action. And then for Christmas Carol, he gets Jim Carrey, who's a very Even at this point, I've seen his version of Christmas Carol. I don't remember it that much, but he's just a more physical actor with body and face, you know, where he's kind of like Beowulf is a monster movie, and it's almost like, okay, the face can be kind of anything and happy and sad, and then he's going back for the subtle with Jim Carrey, and that is at least a human who has
Yeah.
big expressions, but he's mapping it onto, you know. A human person. I wonder, I'm just thinking about how
Plus you get kind
he
of
might
like
have
a
been
different
thinking or how
level.
to, yeah,
Ooh.
or how to interpret the progression. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it's also interesting because you get like a different level of like magical stuff happening in that film. So like
Right.
you know, it's like also a chance to play with atmospherics and everything. Like again, if you're just thinking about it from kind of the technical special effects like perspective, there is kind of a progression there, which is
Yeah.
interesting.
It might be interesting at some point in life to just like watch those three back to back. I
Yeah.
don't know when, but that's also a 5-year range. So Polar Express is 2004, Beowulf is 7, Christmas Carol is 2009. So
Okay.
it's interesting. That's a huge jump in technology. By
So
2009, we're
all
in. in Marvel and Dark Knight territory, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And Avatar comes out December or November
Of that year,
2009.
right?
So, like, all that predates Avatar, actually. Interesting.
Yeah. Which also makes me think, because 2004 was just after like the first Spider-Man. So Sam
Yeah.
Raimi is somewhere in a sci-fi discussion too.
Yeah, for sure. For
He's
sure. There
almost
was a
somewhere in there.
definitely a lot of human body like digital replacement stuff got pioneered by those Spider-Man films for sure.
Yeah, and the horror comedy stuff he did before
Oh, for
Raimi.
sure.
So after Christmas Carol, now this is another different part of Zemeckis's career, where he's pulling from real life stories now. The next movie is Flight, starring Denzel Washington. And again, kind of similar to Castaway. But this is also a real life story he's making look real, like a real, you know,
Yeah, like it's a courtroom drama.
it is a
Like
courtroom
a,
drama. And then we
you
just
know,
kind
at
of
the
flash to the flight, to the actual flight, the fly,
right.
the plane.
Right. And, you know, that stuff is all heavily special effects out. But again, like it's designed to simulate realism as much as possible, not necessarily be action heavy or anything like that.
Now, if I'm looking at his career and looking at what's happened,
Yeah.
this is how I interpret this portion of his career. Because Flight, it was also about him creating these effects and this story with a small budget for him, like under $40 million. I think these animated movies did not do as well, maybe as hoped. Definitely not as well as Back to the Future,
Sure.
Forrest Gump,
Right.
Castaway. You know what I mean? He followed Castaway up with these animated movies that I'm sure did well. But also, now he's doing a live action in a story. It's like, without a big, huge sci-fi story, he probably couldn't get a big budget. Or maybe just in his head, he's thinking, how can I make science fiction, not science fiction, but use special effects just in a cheaper way. He's trying to innovate in another way at this point in his career.
Yeah, it is
It's
interesting.
also hard to do like 150, 150, $200 million movies. It's hard to do.
Oh, for sure.
It's a
It is
drain.
interesting because he does have like these phases of his career. As we talk this through, right? Like
Yeah.
he's got these phases of his career and they kind of build on one another. And I don't know. That's really interesting to think about, especially when I haven't seen, I don't think you've seen the newest movie. But
Not
like
yet, no.
this does make me like interested to think about where that fits in whatever this chapter of his career is right now.
Yeah. Definitely, this is a part of, because it was like funny comedies that kind of ended with Forrest Gump. Then it was
Kind of
like kind of,
adventure comedies almost.
then it was kind of scary, you know, sci-fi, like, you know, even Castaway, if you think about being stranded on an island, is scary. And then What Lies Beneath is a thriller. Contact is like first arrival, first contact kind of story. Aliens are always like, it's just, you know, kind of thrillers in a way.
Yeah.
Then it's Family Fair, Polar Express. Maybe he had kids then, and now it's like adult, like real life stories, adult serious traumas.
For sure, for sure. It's also interesting to maybe think about like what era, when you said kids, like what ages or eras of his life does the does this map onto as well?
Right. What was that for him?
It's because I was just gonna say like it's interesting because like Contact too is ultimately a parent child story, but I also just thought of like a scene in Contact. There's a scene where the main character, when she's a young girl, her father dies. And she's like running to, he has like a heart attack or something. She's running to get his medicine. And as she runs up to the mirror of the like medicine cabinet, you realize like you've been looking at a reflection running towards the mirror, not necessarily her. Like there's this like the special effect is
I
that
remember the
the
shot.
yeah, the camera switches a couple of times in order to sell this idea of her running in the reflection, opening the cabinet, and then running away, and the mirror kind of being the camera that we see this through in a hallway. And like there's like five different parts to that shot. I remember having seen like some behind the scenes stuff of how they did it. Super involved. And it passes by in a second. It's literally she runs up to it, opens it, and leaves. And so like that's another great example of how like he uses maybe almost too much to sell a very simple moment just with an innovative shot.
And that one makes the rounds on social media like once a
Every now
year,
and again. Yeah, for
every now and
sure.
again. It's definitely a shot, and it's funny to be like, it's a great shot and setup. And it's funny to be like, position that for young filmmakers. Like, don't you, there's no need to try that really in your story. Don't write a scene around that. Like, if it just so happens that you could figure it out, but sometimes these accounts are
If you've been
like,
working at a high level for
yeah.
20 years, then maybe give it a shot.
Sometimes these accounts are like, oh, filmmakers do this shot or try this or this is what they do. Like, yeah, this is what the masters do. There's like a Scorsese shot they always show from Goodfellas too, and it's like, yeah, he was 20 years deep by Goodfellas, he'll,
Straight up, yeah.
like what did he do on Mean Streets? What did Zemeckis do on it was the first
Whatever
movie he
came.
directed, I Want to Hold Your Hand in 1978, let's copy those.
Yeah, let's go back to that.
Then he did like again more real life stuff. The Walk, which was about a guy who walked between the Twin Towers on a high wire
Oh, yeah.
in 1974.
I forgot he did that.
I never saw that. I haven't seen most of the rest of his movies really. Then
Yeah,
he
I
did
haven't seen a lot of his
Allied,
laters.
which was a romantic war drama thriller.
Seen
Which,
part of that.
yeah, this movie I remember getting a lot of love. It says it just got nominated for Best Costume Design, but I feel like it was definitely an award contender when it came out, but maybe it just
Yeah, I mean, with
didn't get
Brad and
Obs.
I'm Matt, Marilyn
Marion
Marion,
Cotillard.
that was like when she was very, very kind of like a
Yeah,
hot
very.
commodity.
Yeah, she was like new and really doing a lot of great work, and I'm sure she still is, but
Of
sometimes
course,
when
of
you're
course. So
just hit the
I
scene, they're like, oh, this is the one, and she was holding it down right then.
Yeah, I only say that to say with her and Brad Pitt, I think that movie did get definitely a lot of press and love at that time.
And then so now he's in a whole nother phase right after that. He has like
Okay.
three or four movies and then he jumps to another phase. Next is Welcome to Marwen, which I believe I did see. But
What's
in this
that?
movie, it's like it stars Steve Carell. And
Oh.
like the whole movie is like these dolls, this guy's dolls come to life and like save him from PTSD basically. And
Oh, wow.
Janelle Monáe is in it, and Leslie Mann. I remember this being a real strange movie when I saw it. Like maybe I thought it was something else. But it's also a real sweet movie, real tender. But
Yeah.
it again kind of messes with like I think stop motion and CGI and kind of a surreal thing. This is maybe his first movie that really is like surreal, and this I think is what he's playing with now, is kind of a fantasy within the real world kind of thing. As you'll see when we get to the next few movies. This movie didn't do great. It didn't get great reviews, but it was a big swing for visual effects. But again, in a small way.
Yeah, like I'm looking at some images right now and it looks pretty interesting.
So after that, he does The Witches, dark fantasy comedy horror. So again, it's like something surreal because it's written by, of all people, of all duos, Kenya Barris and Guillermo del Toro.
Really?
Who put those two together? Amazing. Just complete, like grabbing names out of a hat.
I never knew that. That is, I'm speechless.
And this movie was a straight to streaming HBO, so I think
Yeah,
probably a
I
lot of
think
people missed it.
that was 2020. I felt like it actually did the, I remember seeing a lot of social media rounds about it, but it was definitely,
A
I
great
think,
cast.
winter 2020, not a
I
lot of
mean,
theaters.
absolutely amazing cast. Octavia
Yeah.
Spencer, Anne Hathaway, Stanley Tucci, narrated by Chris Rock. I mean, this had names. Music by Alan Silvestri, who
Classic
did
name right there.
most of Zemeckis movies, Back to the Future, Gump, Flight, but also did like Predator and Ready Player One, Spielberg movies, and The Mummy Returns and Night at the Museum trilogy. So this movie was loaded. Did not
Yeah.
make a lot of money, but when you're streaming, how do you even calculate? I guess it must have had a theatrical, a small theatrical release. Maybe, but it was also a COVID movie, so it didn't really stand a
Yeah, it was a
chance.
COVID movie for sure.
After that, he does Pinocchio. So Witches in Pinocchio,
I
classic
keep
literature
forgetting
again.
that he just recently did a Pinocchio movie.
I
I
just
keep
recently
forgetting
did a
about
Pinocchio movie. I think I did watch this, and Del Toro also did a Pinocchio movie.
it. Yeah.
Del Toro's, I felt, was like odd. I don't know. I was not feeling it. I had to watch it again because it just like I was like, what is happening here? And the messages were like conflicting with each other. And Pinocchio was like as whiny as he's ever been. I was not feeling it. I'd have to give it another shot to really be fair to it. But now I can't remember if I watched this one or not. I feel like I didn't see this one. But this was straight to Disney Plus. Again, a loaded cast. I guess when you're making a Disney movie, this was a bigger budget movie too, 150. I guess he just wanted to make a Pinocchio movie.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely part of that. I mean, it's still going on, but part of that live action readaptation that Disney's been doing over the past really 10 years at this point.
Yeah. Interesting. Not a lot of notes about the production of this one. And then he does this movie Here. And Here, I think, is a kind of a return to form for him. It's based on a graphic novel, but it's really experimental.
Super experimental.
And it does feel like when I look at Pinocchio, The Witches, Welcome to Marwen was definitely a swing. But it seemed like here is him being like, don't forget, I do things. I do things with the digital, you know?
Yeah, no, when we started talking about this earlier in the week and really thinking about here from a perspective of special effects and experimentation. And it really like struck me that like pretty much all of his movies, there's some key thing that he's experimenting with,
Yeah.
you know? And definitely like the idea, the gimmick, again, not in a bad way, but the gimmick, the conceit of here is that it's a f all one fixed shot, right? One fixed angle. So the camera doesn't move for the entire movie. And like I feel like him taking that challenge on to do that, from a filmmaking status, and then also to be able to have, you know, Tom Hanks and Robin Wright, you know, the stars of Forrest Gump, be young again in this digital de-aging. Yeah, I feel like for sure it's a kind of a, hey, don't forget about me. I do things, I do this.
What's so crazy about it? Here's how they describe it. The story covers the events of a single spot of land. I thought it was just about the house. It's a single spot of land and its inhabitants, spanning from the distant past to contemporary times. In the plot summary, it says, this is where it starts. Millions of years ago, dinosaurs roamed an area. So it starts with the dinosaurs.
Yeah,
Then
that's what
it's
I've
home to
heard.
like some like ancient human ancestor people. Then it's the estate of Benjamin Franklin's illegitimate son. Then it goes to like the Spanish flu and World War II before it comes to the ownership of this family. That is Tom Hanks and Robert Wright's family as they live all the way through like to COVID and 20 basically it ends in 2024, the movie does. Wild.
Absolutely wild. I mean, it's an incredible. I can certainly understand why, not everybody's going to be into it. It's an incredible swing. You know what I mean? Like
Man,
an
wild.
incredible swing. But I'm kind of I'm interested. I remember, I'm a fan of Terrence Malick, and I remember the first time I saw Tree of Life in the theater,
Sure.
and all of a sudden there's that it's a scene where it just goes back to the dinosaurs, and you like contemplate the death of this dinosaur and the meaning of
Right.
life. And I was like, this is crazy, but I enjoy it. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what that looks like in here.
Yeah, now after seeing that, I'm more interested. Like a single spot of land over its history till now is like pretty trippy.
Yeah, it is interesting.
So it's interesting to go through his career and look at like somebody who's pretty prolific.
I
Even
mean,
if
that's
you
a
feel
ton
like,
of movies
man,
we just said.
even if you feel like, man, I haven't heard from Zemeckis in a while, like within the last 2 or 3 years at any time, there's never a 4 year gap. The most is 3 years between him and a movie.
I mean, if the biggest gap is 3 years, that means he took like 8 months off, if that.
He was not taking time off. He's
There's no
always on to the
time off.
next. He's always on to the next project. So chances are he's working on something now that's going to come out in 2026 or something.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be interested. I'm very. I'll be very interested to see what his follow up from here is,
Yeah. It's so
because
hard. Go ahead. My
I
bad.
was just gonna say, because I feel like for another director, something as ambitious as here might be like, especially with Zemeckis's age, right? He's in his at least mid to late 70s, probably older than that.
Yeah,
He's
he's
in
70,
Spielberg's generation,
72,
right?
yeah.
Yeah, okay. So he's a little bit younger than Spielberg. But anyways, but yeah, 72. You'd almost feel like something as ambitious as here would be like kind of a final retirement film. But like I
Yeah.
get the sense for Zemeckis, it's just another job. So I want to see what
It's
he
another
does
gig.
next.
Well, it's interesting because it's so hard to innovate with special effects now. Everybody's thinking about it. You know, like Scorsese did the de-aging thing in a major way on The Irishman. You know, so on a small scale of like the mundane special effect, it's like, okay, even planning a movie around it, you're just not alone in that territory anymore, you know? Although it would make sense for Zemeckis to team with a black filmmaker and do something that covered passage of time from a black point of view, and Flight's the only movie he's done with a black lead,
Yeah, I
you
mean, that's
know,
fair. And he's done.
or some indigenous filmmakers and do something about the USA over time and all the way to Trump time and on this land. I mean, maybe I'm just thinking about here too much, but I think there is like
He's made. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting.
something. No, I was trailing off anyway, but there's something there, right?
Yeah, no, I think between here and Forrest Gump, that's at least two movies of his filmography that are pretty much about the d America in the 20th century, right? Like,
Right.
I think Forrest Gump is supposed to take place in 1981, but I mean, that movie's about the 90s as much as anything else.
Right.
So like, yeah, it would be interesting to see him do something that's about the passage of time in America from another perspective, or including someone another perspective.
Yeah. No dearth of stories, especially if, as he's shown, he's someone that can dive into real life stories or classic literature. So,
Yeah, I mean, he's done sci-fi, he's done fantasy, he's done classic literature, he's done family drama. I mean, he's kind of done courtroom drama, as we said, with Flight.
I just mean in terms of picking like some other kind of story. His, you
Sure.
know, he could do like, you know, there's all kind of stories written by other artists, and there's also, you know, Flight was a real life story about a black pilot, so you could do a real life story about a black anything, politician, anything, you know.
Yeah, I think I only say that to really talk about his clear willingness and ability to kind of jump into a variety of different types of stories. He doesn't seem to be
Yeah.
scared of that.
And doing the press for here and here, he mentioned that they wouldn't let him do the Back to the Future 4 that he wanted to do, but he was talking like it's still a possibility. So maybe we'll get another Back to the Future
That'd be
at
cool.
some point.
I'd check it out.
Yeah, I think
That's a big movie for me.
he would have millennials would have to check it out. Millennials and Gen
Yeah, you
X,
can. You almost have no choice.
like even if you catch it on streaming afterwards or on demand or whatever, it's like you're gonna want to like take a peek, you know?
For sure. One of the
So I would
greatest
say
film
like
trilogies of all
even
time.
I would say even Bill and Ted is like that, but not as much for millennials. But Gen X, I feel like you checked out that latest Bill and Ted, you know? Just you just like wanted to see those are your guys, you know? But Back to the Future is tough because, you know, really don't know if you're having Marty McFly as an elderly man in the movie. It's got to be like a whole new thing. You know, Michael J. Fox still does do or has done some acting in the recent past. I don't know if he's still capable or not, but, you know, he has Parkinson's and that obviously makes things harder for him, for anyone. So I don't know if he would, what role he would play. Or you know, you can write around that, obviously, but I wonder what that would mean. I don't even know if Doc is still alive at this point. I have to look that up. I don't wanna.
I think he is because I just saw some trailer yesterday for like a live action Rick and Morty, and
He is
he's
86 years
Rick.
old.
He's old for sure. It's
He
funny because it makes me realize how young he was in Back to the Future when I thought he was like this age
Yeah. It's like he was old then. No, he
then.
wasn't even old. He wasn't even old then. He was young.
Right. They just gave
Crazy.
him a white wig.
Yeah. And he had to talk like this, kinda. But real excited. Which he kinda talks like that, but anyway, shout out to Jim from Taxi, you know.
Definitely. Doc Brown.
One of my favorite characters in TV history.
Jim from Taxi.
Yeah,
Yeah, for
yeah.
sure.
The classic like sitcom idiot, but truly with a harder goal.
You don't hear a lot of people talking about Taxi these days. That's a deep cut. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Taxi's getting forgot has gotten forgot about gotten has been forgotten about in a
For
lot of
sure.
ways. Man, that's all I got on Robert Zemeckis, really. And we breezed through
That's
Forrest
it.
Gump, but we never really planned on talking a whole lot about Forrest Gump because it's just there's definitely some themes that revert that still hold true today in Forrest Gump. There's a lot of conservatism in that movie.
Absolutely. It's really an interesting kind of like liberal, and I don't mean liberal in like the kind of like left wing. I mean like neoliberal sort of like 1980s Reagan era sort of deal. Like it's a
Yeah.
real that era of like a view of American history where like racism and bad things happened in the past, but isn't but that's quaint and it can be and we can laugh at it by this like lovable idiot walking through it,
Because look, he's on the bench talking to a black lady who's a nurse, you know. It's fine. His best friend was a black guy who died in the war.
he's from Alabama, he shouldn't like black people, you know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
it's very.
He gave his mom a steak and a shrimping company. It's all good.
Isn't that Sally Field plays his mom, right?
Plays Forrest's mom, yeah.
Yeah, the great Sally Field for sure.
But he gave Bubba's mom a
Oh, that's
steak
right.
in Bubba Gump, yeah. She had no lines in the movie, but we saw her get go from serving white people to getting served by a white person. So it's all good. It was, you know,
Black
Forrest
Queen.
solved racism in his
I
escapades.
gotta give a shout out
His
to
mundanity, he
in
solved
his
racism.
mundanity. Gotta give a shout out to McKelty Williamson, as Bubba. Just
See, I thought it
McKelty.
was Michael T. How do you say this guy's name?
I always thought it was McKelty. I could be
McKelty.
wrong. I could be
Let
absolutely wrong.
me look at the spelling.
I don't know that I've
Michael,
ever
Michael T.
I don't
McKelty,
know that I've
Michael
ever
T.
heard someone actually pronounce that man's name, so I could
Yeah,
be
I need him to come out and say it. At 67 years old, he's like, I'm too old for this, man. If y'all don't know how to say my name, well, I need you to say it, man. Tell me. His name means spirit or silent friend in the Blackfoot language. Oh, no, that's not
Really?
true. He said that. He has said that
Oh.
his name means spirit or silent friend in the Blackfoot language, but this is untrue. That's what
But
Wikipedia.
that's a great fact.
Wikipedia calling him out. Calling him out.
But this
Oh,
is
my
untrue.
goodness.
Man. Got fact checked
Man got a fact check, and a
immediately.
fact check got put on his Wikipedia page. Jesus, black man can't live in this, can't live in this world.
I have nothing as far as casting for Forrest Gump other than to say that I'm casting McKelty as Forrest. You know what I mean? Like that's it. I'm a big fan of that actor. He's great. Wonderful performance in Denzel Washington's Fences. I will always plug that performance. Beautiful. But yeah.
He was great in Fences, and that's great in something else. I if I was doing Forrest today, the only actor that comes to mind is and not for any reason, maybe I just saw a clip of him, but I'd put
Oh yeah,
Lamorne
Lamar.
as Forrest. I think he's funny
Oh
anyway,
yeah.
so he could put maybe it's even more of a like not quite a parody, but like a satire of Forrest.
Yeah.
So he can have a little more fun with it than it is, but.
Yeah, I think if you're gonna do Forrest Gump nowadays, you'd have to do even more
You got to be
satire.
kind of tongue in cheek with it, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Forrest Robert Zemeckis, legendary filmmaker, very white filmmaker.
Absolutely, definitely, you know, kind of like we've talked about with a few of these folks. We talked about Jim Cameron and some others, but just like represents Spielberg, you know, represents just a era of suburban upbringing in this country when you literally didn't and weren't allowed to have black people around you. So
Yeah.
just kind of a lack of awareness there.
If he could get away without having a black person in the movie, he did. And then later, he just started putting them in like very secondary roles and in a few of these movies. But for the most part, he was like, you know, and it like you said, just going through the list, Spielberg, Cameron, him, Scorsese, Tim Burton,
Yeah,
Sam
Martin for sure.
Raimi, like the top filmmakers have been so exclusionary of black people. It's in the wake of where we are now in the country, it's very like telling. And you're like, well,
Yeah.
how could these things happen? And how could you vote for this person or that person? And it's like, if you look at the movies, not that the movies tell the story, or I'm not even trying to prognosticate through movies, but the fact that the top filmmakers, Tarantino, who loves Samuel Jackson, but otherwise, outside of Jackie Brown, was like, I ain't putting no black people in, you know.
Right.
He keeps black people out of the movies, but the N-word in them. Oh, and Django, obviously, but,
Right.
and like Spielberg did Color Purple, but these, man, oh man, it hurts to think about.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a very
Chris Nolan, you know, he could have had black people in almost any of his movies, but he had Tenet, you
yeah,
know,
Tenet for sure.
but like Interstellar, you know, well, there was one black astronaut in Interstellar, and he got really old. Remember, there was one of the guys on the ship.
Yeah. I can't remember where I've seen that actor
But
before. He's good.
Inception, there could have been one of them people jumping through dreams could have been black. I, yeah, I,
Well, I
James
think.
Cameron had plenty of time. I don't even know if any of the Na'vis. Oh, Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana.
She's dark
Yeah.
skinned, but she doesn't consider herself black. I think she's
Yeah, because
South American or Colombian or something. I have to look her up. I don't want to disrespect her, but she's
Dominican
not
and
Dominican.
Puerto Dominican, maybe
Yeah.
Dominican and Puerto Rican.
But she is
But
brown skinned, you know.
absolutely. But yeah, no, I think these folks represent just a viewpoint that has been cultivated, actively cultivated in this
And then
country
there's been
over time.
so little or almost no attempt to put black filmmakers, to give black filmmakers those chances, you know? Even black filmmakers that have done well. Now, Spike, I also say with Spike, it's a unique case because I don't think he wanted to ever go the blockbuster route. But you guys got guys like John Singleton, whose movies pretty much consistently did well. You know, and then he did a Black Fast and Furious movie that did well. That is a big franchise, you know what I mean? But you don't see his name synonymous with these, like, it's not at that, you know, it's not at this level, or you know,
Yeah,
even a
Fuqua.
Fuqua who's done some big movies and helped get Denzel an Oscar, you know, like Tim Story, who's created franchises and consistently does comedies that sell well, you know what I mean? That do numbers. But you know what I mean? It's like where, you know, the doors are not, are just aren't open like they could be.
Yeah,
Even
and I think
when you do well. Even when you do well. And same thing for other, you know, for women filmmakers. Like, we just now are getting women. And I don't even know if across the board there's a lot of women filmmakers. But obviously, Barbie is one that stands out. But
sure.
Barbie and like Wonder Woman, you know, we got, you know, those were
Like
women
big
directed those movies.
blockbusters, yeah.
Right. Those are big movies, you know, and they did well.
Yeah.
Barbie ex exceptionally well. Like,
Oh yeah,
nothing's touching,
mean,
you know what I mean? Like,
smashed it.
yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a point here about, you know, what storytelling does. I think it's consistent with why we kind of what we talk about and why we find this interesting. But like, yeah, stories do set up people's expectations.
Yeah.
And you know, there's that old saying about life imitating art or art imitating life. You know, I think about, well, it's not a movie, it's a TV show, but like Succession over the past few
Yeah.
years. And like, do we end up where we are today if we didn't just have Succession making villainous things
Well,
enticing?
I would say even Billions was probably more influential
Yeah, billions.
among rich people than Succession, too. But both of them existing at the same time and like highlighting this kind of life and trickery, and you can get ahead with the lies and deceit, you know, like they both did that, you know.
Yeah, I definitely think there's that. The kind of I don't know, just glorification, valorization
Yeah.
of a certain type of lifestyle, a certain outlook on life, a certain definition of strength.
I think what you were saying, art imitates life, life imitates art. If anything, yeah, like what happens on the screen is at least a reflection of some values in the real world.
For sure.
You
We've talked
know, and
about go
whiteness is there's oh man, we don't have time to get into this. But
ahead.
like in terms of currency, like I was thinking a long time, like the only thing of value, like money is really the only value that we have. Like you can't live a life just because you're a good person, or you know what I mean? Like what else you have to have money. But whiteness is the other thing of value. You know, you get a little bit more out of a lot of things. Especially in this country, if you're
In this
white.
country, for sure. Yeah, it's interesting I lost where I was gonna go. Oh, no. I remember. We've been talking about sci-fi a fair amount on this episode just because the Micah's did some. But going back to that story thing, that's one of the reasons I or not one of the reasons I think that we can track some of this feeling over the past 10 to 15 years in our sci-fi. There's a reason why this post-apocalyptic zombie post-nuclear, what all these different versions of a post-apocalyptic tale, there's a reason why they've been kind of the go-to sci-fi for a while. And I think that shapes people's expectations. It's like both shows that people have an interest, or not an interest, that there's some sort of feeling going on in the culture, this idea of like, I'm an individual with a gun who's going to be able to withstand a zombie apocalypse sort of a deal. But also, it shapes that going forward. It's like a dynamic thing. And I do think, to a certain extent, some of the sci-fi of has failed us over the past few years. It's been so much more focused on selling us bleak versions of the future than it has been ones filled with possibility. That's
Sorry.
a much larger conversation.
Yeah, I think we have to think about that for the next maybe pick a representative movie. Because yeah, it's been a, it's really a stunning lack of imagination. We were texting and I was online. I was like, what movies or TV shows have a black female president? And I think one person responded like there was something with Alfre Woodard was the black female president. And it's like, oh, wow. We couldn't even imagine it. We could barely imagine it. And we wanted it to happen in real life. Like, but I've seen movies with black male presidents and I've seen female presidents, but never black female president. And apparently there's only one example. And then when I realized that this was even before the election, I was like, that's embarrassing. We didn't even imagine it to be true.
That's crazy.
So there's a lot of work to be done on the creativity phase. But and it really doesn't start with movies. Movies is like where it ends. I'm sure if we looked at like literature in these times, we would see things that predate movies. But we need it on the ground level. And then we need
Right, for
those
sure.
thoughts to
Good.
turn into movies.
Like we were talking about Forrest Gump today, that's a 1981 novel or 1983 novel or something like that. You know what I mean? So
Right.
it does, it starts somewhere else before movies, to your point.
Well, we brought it back to the pod, to the premise.
Full circle, baby.
Circle. All right, man, I'll get at you later.
Yep.